You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Southern Peanut Growers, committed to making sustainable more attainable for chefs and cooking enthusiasts worldwide.
This episode is brought to you by 818 Tequila, delicious and smooth tequila, meaning harmony with the earth. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
Over the years, there have been many trendy methods of naming your restaurant, from street numbers to creative abbreviations. I personally like it when a business is straightforward, a book title that clearly describes its contents. Cafe Spaghetti does just that, in a playful way, while leaving room for the diner to be wowed by just how serious this neighborhood Italian spot is about its foods.
And we wouldn't expect anything less from our friend, chef and owner, Sal Lambaglia. Opened at the start of this month, Cafe Spaghetti is in Brooklyn's Carroll Gardens, and it's Sal's first step to ownership after many years amongst the talented teams behind Andrew Carmelini's NoHo Hospitality Group, and most recently as the chef at Bar Premi. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're so excited to hear all about Cafe Spaghetti. We know nothing except for the name, of course, and what we've read online. So tell us about the concept, and I'm curious why spaghetti was the noodle of choice for the name.
Yeah, so where do I start? The name I randomly just thought of, I would say probably like pre-pandemic. I was like, first venture eventually, right? Because I was like, I just wanted to like have a name ready to go. And I was like, you know what? Maybe it's Sal's. Maybe it's like Sal's of Brooklyn. So I bought, as many names online as I could, so that they were locked in. Cafe Spaghetti, I thought of, and I have this group of like restaurant like consiglieres that I kind of talk to. They advise, we discuss ideas and sort of like opinions, and I brought the name to them and to each of them. And, the most of them were like, yes. And some were like, it's weird. Cafe Spaghetti. as soon as I opened, I knew it was the perfect name. Prior to that, I was like, it was a little skeptical. Like, okay, fine. I was skeptical, but as soon as we opened, it just clicked, and I was like, I'm so happy that I went with this name.
Take us back to the beginning. When did you start thinking about it? Because you were at Bar Premi for a long time, and you had a partnership there to some degree, right? And so when did you start thinking about having your own thing and put it into motion?
Yeah, so yes, I was an owner there and as well a partner. I think it was about, let's say around year five or so. Premi just turned 8 the other day, and I was there for 7 of those 8 years. I'd say around year 5, I was, getting some calls from some realtor friends, and, I've been living in Carroll Gardens now for about 18 years, and I love the neighborhood. Obviously my wife and I, we have a couple of kids, but ton of families, a lot of kids. I, of course, commute to Manhattan, and a lot of people who live here do commute to Manhattan. So I just felt like it was super close to the city, kind of centralized in Brooklyn. And I started looking at spaces, I would say 2018, 2019. It was sort of like very kind of like loosely during that time. And then things got a little bit more serious right as the pandemic sort of hit and we shut down. That's when I was sort of out there a little bit more and making some calls.
Got it. And so your first step essentially was real estate, and that's what brought you in. At that point, do you have partners in this business, or is it just you?
So I have two investors, one of which works here, and then the other is actually, it's like a small restaurant group. They do not work.
Cool. And so so your first step was find a space. What sort of came next? I mean, tell us a little bit about the process of developing a business plan, deciding on that it was going to be, did you always know it was going to be a neighborhood Italian place? Did that change based on where you saw spaces? Were you only looking in Carroll Gardens? Were you looking all over Brooklyn?
Yeah. So, no, I was just looking at Carroll Gardens. There's a ton of Italian restaurants down here. Everybody who I approached was like, Carroll Gardens, there's like a million Italian restaurants there. What are you doing? And you know, of course, like, you know, the question was always like, and like people that knew me, I think understood what I wanted to do. And people that like, you know, sort of questioned were like, what's going to be different about your spot? And why is it going to be, why is it going to be busier or just as busy or popular and all that stuff? This space came about, I live a block away from this restaurant, which has saved my life literally. And obviously the commute is, you know, a minute. So I asked, there's a plumber who does my building where I live, and is a good friend of the family. And he's like, hey, there's a space on Union Street. You should go take a look at it. And so I did. And I reached out to the landlord, and this woman owned the building for about 80 years with her dad. Her dad owned the buildings. And there's three attached buildings. And so they owned all three for, like I said, a super long time. And I went in and we negotiated. She had a death in her family. So we kind of stopped discussing and we kind of like put a hold on moving forward. I went to go look at some of the spaces still in the area. Went on Court Street, went on Smith Street. And then out of the blue one day, I was actually talking to a friend about this space. I kid you not. I'm like, man, I don't know, like that space, maybe I made a mistake. You know, maybe I should have just taken it. And then while I'm telling my friend the story, I get a phone call and it's her. And I was like, I got to call you back. This is Camille. And he knew Camille as well. And he's like, oh my God. He's like, get that space. And, which to me, I don't know, it was like a sign. I was like, you know what? And she said hello. And I was like, Camille, I'm coming to see you. And she's super sweet. She's like in her 80s. She's a doll. She just had dinner here recently. And we signed a deal. That was July, June or July. I forget exactly, which I know I should know these things, but I think it was June. Let's say June.
Of 2021?
Of 2021, yeah.
And how, was the space a restaurant before or was it just?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, what was it? Was it a restaurant? Were you able to? Yeah.
It was a cafe. It was called Canteen. It was like a neighborhood gem. And you know, Cafe Spaghetti is across the highway, across the BQE. And, you know, which is sort of like a little bit like, it's like an area like in its own, you know, Court, Smith, Clinton, these are all like popular streets. I feel like once you cross the BQE, it's like, I don't know, it's like no man's land, kind of. At least people sort of like, if you tell them that you're going across the highway, or like when I was, they were like, across the highway? No, it's not as busy there. And all this stuff. And I actually like it more because of it. Like the block that I'm on, yeah, like by no means is it as busy as Court or Smith Street. But it's like a little bit off the beaten path. And like the block itself that we're on between Columbia and Hicks is like, I don't know, it's like, it's super quaint. It's a little bit quiet. It's like all these like colorful buildings and there's like a couple of businesses. So I actually like that it's like a little bit quiet, you know. It sort of has like a small town feel. But Canteen was a coffee shop. They had like a 4-year run in this space. They were super sweet. They couldn't survive through the pandemic, unfortunately. And they were just open for like breakfast and some light lunch. And then before that, it was probably like six places. I don't really know. I haven't been to any of the of what was happening here. But every once in a while, I get like a customer who's like, "Oh my God, this used to be so and so's place," and they had fried chicken. It was just kind of food. So I've been hearing more and more of the history behind this space, which has been pretty cool.
I feel like that always happens to the neighborhood spot. It's like, "Oh, welcome. This was my favorite beloved fried chicken joint," or whatever. And it's like, yeah, New Yorkers are funny that.
It is. And you know, just with that, it's like the woman Alex who was here, again, she was a doll. And like, I never met her, but we still message and like she DMs me like, oh my God, like, you know, she reposted the opening story. So she's been super sweet, but like everybody loved her, you know? And so, you know, like I felt I had some big shoes to fill, right? So she, cause they were like, oh my God, I'm like, where's Alex? Like early on, I'm like, I don't know where she is. So that's been kind of funny.
Do you feel like it helps that you're from the neighborhood and that, you know, that you've lived there for almost two decades and sort of sounds like you know people in the neighborhood as well?
Yes, it's definitely a big help. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know, I kind of feel like, you know, when I, like, because, like, they ask, oh, like, where do you live? Where are you from? I'm like, I've been here for almost 20 years. I live up the block. Oh, my God, up the block. I live on Henry or I live on Higgs. So there's been a lot of that. And, yes, I do have a lot of friends, you know, who grew up here and, of course, over the years that I've made. So it's been super cool.
Tell us a little bit about the build-out. I know you have a lot of family. Did you guys DIY it? Did you hire contractors?
Yeah, so we when I first signed the lease, I had nobody. I am not handy whatsoever. I mean, I can't even put a shelf up. That sounds kind of sad, but it's the truth. I was kind of like, I made some calls to some local people and some friends and trying to figure out, like, what's the best way and, of course, the economic way. You know, it's a pretty small space. And, you know, we have this huge garden, which I'm sure we'll get into. But I made some calls, and then I was connected to Matt Matty, who is a hell of a guy. He built and designed Lilia, Chez Montante, Weather Up, Number 7, a bunch of places. I'm missing a bunch. But, yeah, we had a meeting, and when I brought him into the space for the first time, we walked to the backyard, which was full of weeds and, you know, overgrown trees and stuff. And I knew he was the guy for the job because we walked into the backyard and he has kind of like long hair and it was like a windy day. And just like, he just stared like into the yard and like, it was about like 15 seconds, which is like a long time, you know, and he didn't say much. And I kind of looked over and I'm thinking to myself, like, what's happening? You know, like, is he okay? You know, and like his hair was moving in the wind and I'm like, And he looks over to me, he's like, this is great, man. He's like, I want to do this for you. So that's how it started. And then, you know, from there, I wanted a couple things for sure. I wanted dark green. And we have some exposed brick. We have some super high original ceilings. Of course, I didn't want like any of that touched. So I really wanted to kind of keep the bones, you know, in the design. And I didn't want that stuff, you know, to be changed. So, you know, he added a bunch of marble in the space and a lot of shelving. It's honestly, a lot of it is his own personal touch. You know, we have like a lot of like stuff from like Naples, and there's a lot of photos of my family and grandparents and my dad from when he worked on Mulberry Street. But I got to be honest, like the majority of design is all Matty's vision.
What was the vision that he was specifically having with the wind blowing in the air, looking at the courtyard?
like one thing he wanted, you know, I wanted to cover the whole entire backyard so that we were like rainproof. I was always worried about the size of the space. And I will always be forever worried about the size of the space. The inside, just about 18 seats. There's like a 6-seat bar, which of course we seat and you can dine at. There's a couple of high tops. And then in the back, before you go to the garden, there's like an 8-top, you know, there's like 4 deuces. So I wanted to kind of create more coverage in the yard. So obviously if it would rain, we wouldn't lose that, especially during the warmer months. But Matty's vision, you know, he wanted to keep it like super, super Italian. Like, we had dinner, we had some conversations. I kind of showed him a bunch of pictures of what I was thinking, but there was no deck, you know, there was no like, you know, design process. We kind of just went with it, which at first I was very worried. I was like, wait a second, you know, working with NoHo, every opening there was like, you know, decks upon decks of colors, design, you know, and he's kind of like, we're just going to go with it, man. And I was like, okay. You know, but like, I don't know, like I was always intrigued by like, you know, those big colorful decks. Right. Of course, in time I figured out those cost a lot of money. So yeah. I'm very thankful to Maddie for not having gone down that road, you know? But yeah, he wanted to keep it super Italian, like knickknacks and pictures. And, you know, there's a couple of like banners that say Italy and Napoli, you know, like a little bit. I feel like, you know, Maddie said once, he's like, I don't think you can make this place corny, you know, even if you try. He's like, I want you to like, there's like, you know, like some places have like figurines and pictures of like their, of like a fake grandfather and, you know, like right. a gorilla egg, you know.
But cheeky, but like, not cheesy. Right.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, bring me everything. As long as it's real and it has a meaning, he's like, bring it over. So that's what I did. I just kept bringing him stuff. And he kept like, he's like, we're going to put this here. We're going to put this there. So yeah, Maddie was a big help.
The Lambaglia family memorabilia is enshrined right now in Cafe Spaghetti. I love it.
All right, so if you haven't like, if you haven't seen or read the review, then to get a visual, it's like now it's like a, there's some cobblestones. There's an antique Vespa. There's like striped yeah. umbrellas in the backyards. It's very,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very it's all cute.
I mean, I pretty much like I can like sell this stuff if I wanted to. People have been asking. Yeah. I'm selling it, redo it. No, but
so tell me about your like your concerns and were they concerns for your partners over the limited seating and was there, you know, I feel like dining in a post-pandemic era, the number of seats you have inside is a little less important. So tell us a little bit about how you like. Clearly, you forged ahead and took the space anyway. But tell us about that decision process.
Yeah. So, you know, the garden helped. You know, I think right now back there, we could probably fit around 60 people back there. And then I'm actually sitting outside, and we built like a, of course, like everyone else, we built like a little like street, like a little street house. Right. And we legit made it like a house. There's curtains in here. There's fans and plants and pictures. It's crazy. But we try to make it as cozy as possible. But out here is about 20 seats plus some sidewalk tables. You know, all in, we're about 100 seats all in, which has been great because we've been using those seats. Obviously, we're in like prime time. But yeah, Maddie's vision, you know, he wasn't really so concerned about how small the inside was. He just kept wanting to put emphasis on the backyard. And, you know, timeline-wise really worked out. You know, I wanted to open up in November and, of course, January. And I was like, I'm going to open in March. And that all kept changing, which, I don't know, I think deep down inside I knew it would. But I was hopeful to kind of, like, open earlier. I just wanted to get to work. You know, we opened in May, which I think – was super positive and helpful, you know, because we did have access to that yard and we like put it to use. Yeah, so you know, there's 60 seats back there; they're all in use. We covered half of it, and like you just mentioned, Alex, about sort of like the change and how we utilized it. You know, I come from all large, very large restaurants, so for me it was a big change, right? Coming here, I'm like sitting in there and there's like 18 super tight seats. And it would keep me up at night. You know, I think I've been sleeping a little bit better now because it's been so supportive. And of course the yard, you know, we have some space, but, you know, Maddie kept saying not to cover the whole yard. We got a bunch of like these hanging vines and ivy everywhere. And he really wanted to like leave it open, you know, and not sort of build, you know, especially not like in the beginning. He wanted it to be like supernatural. It's super green. And I haven't told him yet, but like, he's been right. You know, yes, when it rains, we lose, you know, a third of the yard and we just have like 25 seats back there. I kept focusing on like the volume and like, you know, we got to pay the bills and, you know, we got to, you know, labor's gone up and yada, yada, and like all this stuff. But I think, you know, Maddie was right. You know, it makes for a nicer restaurant. And I think when it gets cold, we'll figure it out. But, I think he was right about sort of keeping it keeping the yard open, even if we did lose half the yard. So,
yeah, I think it's always, I think it's always wise, just even if you're not constrained in that way, to start small and have, you know, have a line of people waiting outside the front door, than to have a big empty restaurant just because you're so focused on what the numbers could be if it were full. It can be a really challenging thing. And it's always much more fun to go to a packed, tiny little restaurant. You can always take the space next door and space upstairs, or right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, like for me, I mean, anyone who knows me, like, this is Cafe Spaghetti. It literally has, it's a dream come true. I mean, I think, like, in my head, I've always envisioned, whether it be Sal's Cafe Spaghetti, obviously Cafe Spaghetti came a couple of years ago, but at some point I was envisioning this space being in operation, and, you know, hearing the playlist and seeing people eat, and, you know, seeing the yard in full motion and seeing my team having fun. Like, I don't know. It's like it already happened, you know, at some point in my dreams. And I'm super thankful. Super, super happy.
Tell us a little bit about your journey. And you touched on, you know, the differences between, you know, the opening process with NoHo Hospitality versus your own place. Tell us some of the other things that sort of gave you the confidence to do this space, and what are some of the other things you took from the NoHo Hospitality and put into opening Cafe Spaghetti?
I always kind of say this, and we always hear it. It's kind of like, whatever's meant to be will be. And I think, you know, timing is everything. You know, a bunch of years back before our premium opened up, I actually went and showed. I was at Lafayette, and I wanted to move on. And I had a meeting with Carmelini. I'm like, listen, I want to move on. All I want to do is like spaghetti and meatballs. I got to figure it out. I was like, all right, you know, he's like, let's just touch base in a couple of weeks. I took him to go see a space that was on Houston Street. That was an old Five Guys Burgers. And I was so excited about it. I'm like, this is it. I'm going to open up Sal's and that's it. And I'm going to sell pasta. And I took him to go see the space. And I was like, hey, chef, I was like, come see the space with me. And I took him there and I was like, I want to open this up. I'm going to raise money. And, you know, this is like, you know, eight, maybe like 9 years ago, you know, I didn't really know what I was talking about. I mean, I thought I did. And maybe I kind of did. But I'm glad that I went and I did Bar Premium, you know. And listen, excuse me. You know, opening restaurants, I think, has helped me a lot. You know, I think anyone who has opened a business, you know, not just restaurants, but it's the reason why I'm here, right? I mean, I started out back at Avoce, and then I opened La Conda Verde. I went on and worked at the Dutch, opened the Dutch in Soho. I opened Dutch Miami. I lived there for about a half a year. Went on and I opened Lafayette. And then I left Lafayette and opened Joe's Pub. Sorry, Joe's Pub was before Lafayette. And then I Joe's Pub for a little while, and then Lafayette. And then I went and opened Bar Premi. And sorry about all those opening stories. No, I know. And so it's like, for me, I don't know. It made me super confident. And I feel like having gone through all those openings turned me into this like opening monster, right? It's like, you know, listen, I'm learning every single day, right? By, you know, I'm not saying that I got it down, but you know, you go through that, and the review processes and photo shoots and, you know, staffing and menu development and special, I mean, everything involved, right? I mean, it's just changed how I look at restaurants, right? And it changed the way I do things here, you know? So it's been a hell of a ride, you know, and obviously still continuing on, but the journey that was a super important journey, and I'm very grateful for it.
Is there anything that surprised you with your opening that you hadn't experienced before?
I think having to pay all the bills, you know, like, of course I opened up all the restaurants and I didn't have to worry about, anything really like, you know, on the back end side, right? You know, Noho was a big company. We had finance team and HR team, you know, and now I'm like writing checks and paying like the plumber. I'm like, why? Like, what's happening? You know, like
the unsexy stuff.
Oh my God. I'm like, I just want to cook, you know? So that's been interesting. And again, listen, you know, I think what I thought I knew back in June, you know, compared to what I know now is it's been astronomical, you know?
I mean, speaking about that, you know, you came at all these openings as like the chef partner and chef operator with your time at Noho, and you had this whole back office doing all these things that come with having a large restaurant group. How was it for you in terms of like the planning and the like budgeting? Did you budget enough? Were you like, oh God, you know, was there things where you overspent, underspent that surprised you?
You know, I do this thing and I don't really know why I do it. I was always like a list person. And even now, like in my notes, like I have a list of like what groceries I have to buy, and what my daughter needs, or I've always worked off of lists. And you know, Cafe Spaghetti, I didn't have any like fancy, you know, programs for budget and what I could afford and what I couldn't afford. I just kind of winged it, which I know sounds kind of crazy and not professional after having done all the openings, but like I knew that I wasn't going to spend $1 million, right? And I kind of used that as like, cause I don't know, I feel like $1 million is like, even though now it's like that means nothing. But I feel like $1 million for like this size space. Listen, like I could have totally spent $1 million here, you know. And I won't say how much I actually spent. It was not $1 million. But I don't know. I use that as sort of like, you know, as sort of like something to work off of. You know, I had a bunch of lists and some like, you know, full yellow notepads. But you know, I was smart about it. You know, like I bought some stuff secondhand, and, you know, I drove to like Pennsylvania and like went to this like restaurant auction, you know, Matt Maddie was a big help. Obviously, you know, I spent some money with him, but you know, it was controlled, right? You know, he didn't just go off and say, you know what, you're going to spend, you know, $500,000 on all this. It was kind of sort of like day by day, you know, hey, I'm going to buy this material. We're going to buy this paint. We're going to use these fans. Let's not change this. Let's wait till later. So I felt like I had like a lot of control, you know, with like changes and what I was spending. Obviously equipment, you guys know, speaks for itself. Everything costs money. But I can say that I was in control for like a lot of what was happening. The last month or two, I didn't even know what happened to the rest of the cash that I had. You know, it was like, you know, it's like, you know, maybe this wasn't a good fit. Maybe this broke down because it wasn't in use, right? We need all these plants. We need more staplers. So shit got real the last 2 months. Excuse my French. I thought I had everything covered. Then I was like, wait a second. I don't have a juicer. I don't have enough cutting. I don't have enough tables. And I'm like, no, I thought it was all figured out. So that was a big surprise.
That always happens. I think at the end, there's always some unwelcome surprise. But speaking of a welcome surprise, so you also welcomed a new baby right before the restaurant opened. Tell us about parenting and opening a restaurant all at the same time.
Yeah.
Parenting a newborn.
You know, I was when I left Preemie in September, I was really trying to time the opening with the birth of my second child. And I was like, I got this. And I was telling my wife, I'm like, don't worry. You know, I'm like, I'm going to open the restaurant in November. We're going to be open for like 5 months before the baby comes. It's going to be perfect. and I truly believed it. And if you would have came and saw the space of where it was at in November, like you would have laughed, you know, like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to start delivery. We're going to be a commissary. You know, it's like, what was I thinking? But even like in January, February, I was like, all right, we're doing May. No, yes, no, we're doing March. And I was like, I'm going to open this up before. And then of course, like in January, February, I was like, this is not going to happen. But my wife, God bless her, she, you know, she wasn't here every day, you know, but she was still like, you got this. We cannot open the BB comes. She's like, we have to open before. We need the income. We need money. You have to open. I'm like, Gina, that's not how it works. Like, we're just going to, like, dude, we're gonna open. Like we need permits. She's like, no. You said you were going to open. You have to open. That's like, it's so funny. But, yeah, then the baby came. I'd say a month before the baby came, I was like, all right, I'm going to open this thing up in May. Like, this is it. And May was gonna, like, May was the date, right? There was no June or July. It was going to be like the first week of May. So the baby came and we stuck to it. And I, again, like, we weren't open yet, right? So I had all of April to stay home, you know, kind of like get set up, which was a huge help. And I think that I should have just stuck with opening up after the baby, which would have helped me out a lot just mentally, you know, and for planning purposes. But yeah, listen, it's, you know, the real hero is my wife. And I think after number one, with number two, you're kind of like, you know, moms are, even with number one, not that I would say it's like two is the, but, you know, mothers are the real superheroes, you know? You know, when I catch a second and I'm home with the both of them, I literally start to cry. I can't handle it, or it's a bad thing. You know, I love being home, but, you know, it's just the moms are it, you know?
It always happens at the same time.
Yes, yes.
There's no avoiding it. There's just no avoiding it, I think. But you makes you a good multitasker.
I don't know. I feel like if you work in restaurants and you got to plan, you know, you got to be, you know, like you just said, a good multitasker, you know, that's, you know, it's super important, you know, but of course having a good sidekick by my side, which, you know, of course my wife makes it a lot easier. So super thankful for
three kids, basically three babies.
Three little babies.
This episode is proudly supported by Southern Peanut Growers, who are spreading the word about peanut sustainability. As the planet's resources are strained to meet the nutritional needs of its populations, many responsible chefs are doing their part by sourcing local and sustainably raised food. Many are surprised to learn that peanuts are one of the most sustainable plant-based proteins available. Southern Peanut Growers created the campaign Making Sustainable More Attainable in partnership with award-winning chef Steven Satterfield. Together, they're bringing the sustainability message to chefs nationwide. Whether it's conserving water, minimizing fertilizers, or achieving zero waste, peanuts are a logical choice for your next menu. Southern Peanut Growers represent farmers across Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, and Alabama. For more information, visit www.peanutbutterlovers.com.
I'm Chava Perivan, co-host of Agave Road Trip on HRN, here to talk about 818 Tequila. 818 creates their tequila using traditional methods at a family-owned and operated distillery in Jalisco, Mexico. From the blue agave they grow to their recycled glass bottle, 818 emphasizes the earth's importance in all they do. Their distillery runs on biomass and solar power, which means they don't rely as much on fossil fuels and are able to reduce their carbon footprint. Their labels, corks, and boxes are all certified by the Forest Stewardship Council as coming from sustainably managed forests. 818 is a proud member of 1% for the Planet, through which they support HRN as well as Sacred, my organization in Jalisco, where together we transform agave byproducts and water waste into adobe bricks that are donated to local infrastructure projects, like a local library in Zapotitlán de Vadillo. Visit drink818.com to learn more about their sustainability efforts and find 818 near you. 818 has been part of so many magical nights for me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. 818 Tequila, imported by 818 Spirits, Manhasset, New York. 40% alcohol by volume. Drink responsibly.
All right, Al, should we go over to order fire?
Yes,
we should. You want to introduce it?
Sure. So we're working on something a little new to end the show. And the idea is that when we're doing videos, we will be giving you 10 questions to answer in 10 minutes while picking up a dish.
My wife?
You get off the hook today because you don't have to pick up a dish, but you just have to answer the questions. And they're very, very easy. Just kind of quick fire questions about your restaurant and about your journey, sort of. So I'll kick it off and tell us your favorite menu item at Cafe Spaghetti.
Favorite menu item is the spaghetti vongole, spitting clams.
And the most ordered menu item so far? I guess you're only a month in, so.
I would say right now it's the rice balls.
Rice balls.
Mm. Yeah.
What about your best food cost item?
Ooh, my best food cost item. I'm not going to tell you the actual one, but no, I would probably say the rice balls maybe.
Makes sense. I mean, you probably have a good food cost across all your pasta. Are you across all the pastas, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're making one shape. We're from Naples. So everything is all about like the dry pasta, you know? We're buying spaghetti and linguine and the fusilli shape that we get, we're making the rest. But, I love dry pasta and the texture and how al dente it gets. You know, I like fresh pasta. I love a good ravioli, fettuccine, but, I love dry pasta more.
Yeah. A little toothsomeness to it. Like an al dente. Makes sense. Tell us something that you're doing to make your business sustainable.
To make it sustainable.
You can use sustainable in any way that makes sense to you.
Sure. I am really trying to figure out how to make all of my employees super happy. Whether that means more perks, whether that means family meal, whether that means, certain holidays off, all that good stuff.
Well, you kind of got the next question on that one, because the next one was, how do you plan to hire and keep great employees, great talent? So I'm curious, I imagine given the size of your interior space and that you're probably making yourself work a lot, do you have a pretty small team?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working a lot. You know, to be honest, I really value that question. And I'm not just saying it because I have to say it. And you can ask anybody who works with me or who has worked with me. My team is everything. I come in every day and I'm here. I have been here every hour since we've been open and then some. From creating to helping the team whatever we got to do, right? We're making staff meal. We have to sweep, mop, whatever the case is. My team is a big, big part of the success that is Cafe Spaghetti. I have a pretty good sized team. I have a lot of guys and girls who work part time, and I have a bunch who are also full time. I think I'm used to working with bigger teams. And for me, I'm probably a little bit overstaffed, which don't tell anybody that I am. Other than overstaffed, but I don't know. It helps me a little bit, and it helps them. And I think something that I'll say about that is, everyone who works has worked in big restaurants, and not that Cafe Spaghetti is a tiny restaurant. We are internally, obviously the Guardian changes that, but I don't know. It was like refreshing to them and to myself, which is why I'm here, but to not do all these covers, right?
Right.
I think about the amount of covers and the amount of pastas that I've picked up and cooked at one time. And it's a lot, it's a lot. You know, my dad has been a chef for all his life and he's still cooking and he's here. But, God bless, he's in good shape, but it's a lot, night in and night out, hundreds and hundreds of covers. So for me, I don't know. I love the size. I love that we're not doing thousands of covers a night or hundreds of covers a night. It's kind of like the perfect storm right now. So, and the staff really like relates to that too. So it's been nice to see.
Not one of your questions, but are you guys 7 days lunch and dinner, or what's
Right now we're just dinner only Tuesday to Sunday. We're doing like a little cafe on the weekends with a light brunch sort of menu. There's a couple egg sandwiches, there's some granola, but that's just sort of like a little prep into brunch, which will start I think at the end of June. We're kind of like just like doing dinner and locking that in, and then we're closed on Mondays for now as well too.
Takeout,
we'll start probably this week or next week. I'm a big fan of delivery. You know, my wife and I take out a lot when we're super busy. And this neighborhood, I think, loves delivery. So yeah, we'll start it up eventually, but maybe next week.
Okay, back to the list. What was the worst building or developing moment that you went through?
Having to move equipment downstairs into the basement. We were moving. I had bought a big dishwasher for the basement, and we were moving it. I'd say probably in like January. It was a freezing day, and the steps that we had, I put new steps in down to the cellar. The steps that we had were like super super like steep, and these two gentlemen, God bless them, they were moving the dishwasher downstairs, and I went to go make some room in the back area, and I heard a big bang.
Oh no.
And I came back, and this gentleman was underneath the dishwasher.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh, you know what? I'm done. I'm done. It was the last step. So he kind of like caught the dishwasher. But right. I can't tell you that day what I bought that gentleman. I mean, I bought them lunch and coffee and Gatorade. I gave him cookies to take to his family. He was fine, but it was a scary moment.
So scary. Oh, my God. Wild. I'm sure heart was like in your throat. Oy. Well, I'm glad he was okay. And I'm glad the dishwasher made it downstairs. But there's always one of those. This is one of our favorite questions. What about your most influential role model within or outside the hospitality industry?
I really want to be like Matthew McConaughey and say it's my 10 years. You know, I really want to say that. I'm not going to say that though.
I thought you were going to say Matthew McConaughey.
No. Let's go back. I think it's my dad. You know, I think it's my dad. My dad, you know, really quick, I'll take a minute. My dad has been in restaurants for a long time, you know, since he came to this country, you know, in his early 20s. Like I said, he's 70. You know, he's still in restaurants and ups and downs and the shoulda, woulda, couldas. You know, he kept with it. You know, he kept with it, kept doing his thing. And I value him for that and his hard work. So, yeah, my dad.
I thought you were going to say the restaurant consigliere's, which we didn't get to dive into, but I'm very curious about that.
I could come with the next one, though.
I'm kidding. Next time.
So this sort of leads into that best business resource or piece of advice.
You mean like who is that?
It could be
a book. It could be like a book or a podcast, magazine. It could be a person, whatever.
Business resource, right, or advice?
Or it could be the consigliere.
It could be your consigliere.
No.
It could be anything.
You know, I have like two people. I mean, I have many people who have been telling me to quit where I was at Premi, to quit and hurry up and open this restaurant. I'd say this is my good friend Vinny Falzone, who's been by my side for a while, and he's in restaurants too in New Jersey, but you know, he's always been there, and he's in that restaurant consigliere group, and so he's kind of like one of the first calls that I make to say, hey, listen, Vin, what do you think? I got this space, or I got this menu item, or it's Vinnie Falzon.
Sal, one thing you would tell a young chef about the path to ownership?
I would tell them, what did I tell them? I would tell them like a lot of things. I would tell them to stay in school. No, I'm only kidding.
Stay what?
Stay employed.
No. I would say like really prepare yourself, you know, get as much experience as possible prior to opening any business, right? But yeah, really like, really kind of like go through it, you know, go through it, prepare yourself on all levels because it's a lot. It's a lot.
And final question, Sal, what is your why? Why did you choose to open a restaurant?
Why? Because it, you know, I think it was meant to be, you know, I maybe it sounds cliche, but I don't know. I think, you know, I've always felt like this for years, you know, and I've watched a bunch of Italian chefs, any chef, right? But more chefs opening up like Italian restaurants, you know, over the years. And we all know who they are, whether in Brooklyn or Manhattan. And I always thought like, man, like, you know, is there going to be room for me? You know, is my restaurant going to matter? You know, is it going to be good enough? And obviously, listen, Cafe Spaghetti is a month old. We'll find that out in like a year or two or three or five or 10, right? And I'm not saying, you know, any of that for like the future, but for right now, I don't know. I was always hoping that there was a little space for me that was like carved out. And not just for myself, but for Cafe Spaghetti. So I always wondered about it. I think I feel better about it now, you know, given where I've come in the last 8 months and where we've gone in the last month, almost being open. So yeah, that's why.
Cool.
Why? Do it because you love it. All right, Al, you want to wrap us up?
Yeah, thanks, Sal. I've always enjoyed chatting with you, and we're very excited and proud to see that you've got your space and your niche. And it is definitely carved out for you.
Thank you.
We're gonna be there with our because basically all our kids eat is pasta, so you know.
Yeah, we'll run around and jump on the Vespa.
Yeah, well, let's
do anything but eat, probably.
I just gotta say this. And first, thank you so much for having me. You guys are amazing, and I love what you guys have done and continue to do. We had 23 children back here last year. Listen, I love kids. I adore kids, so it's fine. It's just so funny, like 23 kids, and there was rocks and spaghetti and potato sauce, like. What a deep clean we did like the next day. It was unbelievable.
This is a neighborhood restaurant, right? I think.
That's, yeah. And it's amazing. Like you just put pasta and like the kids love the gravel rocks. I don't know.
Yes.
I just don't understand. But yes, it sounds like a recipe for kid heaven.
Yeah. And like there's been, I mean, I've seen like, there's been like newborns like laying in the rocks and parents are just like dumping their kids and they're like digging through. I mean, it's amazing. It's been awesome.
Sal, how do we find the restaurant online, on social?
Yeah, Cafe Spaghetti on Instagram, cafespaghetti.com is the website. Yeah, that's
cool.
Where we are.
We are opening soon and at Tillit NYC. Thanks again, Sal, and we'll see you at the table.
Thank you so much.
This show is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.